सभी को मैत्री पूर्ण जय भीम। I was thinking, what do we mean when we say Jai Bhim? You know, we say Jai Bhim, Jai Bhim, Jai Bhim. What do we mean? Jane and Kanya, they must be asking, what does Jai Bhim mean? Well, it means, of course, victory to Bhim. Bhim is Dr. Bhimrao Ramji Ambedkar. So it's a very, very affectionate, very loving thing that we say. But what does Bhim's victory mean? What are we wishing for? Have you ever thought about that? Jai Bhim, Jai Bhim. But what do you mean? Well, what I see it as meaning is that we want liberty, equality and fraternity for India. We want casteless India. Bhim will really be victorious when India is casteless. I think it's important to remember what we're saying when we say this. Sometimes when we say Jai Bhim, it doesn't greet people, it pushes them away. Sometimes Jai Bhim is the flag of Apne Log. People who don't belong to Apne Log, they feel, they don't want us. So I think we need to remember what we're saying when we say Jai Bhim. We're saying not victory to our people. We're saying victory to everybody. Sarva log apne log hai. Sabhi log apne log hai. Correct? You have to translate into English. So, yes, that's what we mean when we say Jai Bhim. At least that's what I'd like to suggest we should mean when we say Jai Bhim. Otherwise, saying Jai Bhim means defeat of Bhim.
Defeat
of Bhim. We defeat Bhim when we create more caste consciousness. So this is what we mean when we say Jai Bhim. We're saying, let's have a casteless India. So this is what Baba Sahib was fighting for. So I want to explore this a bit more. I've heard this morning a report that some of you feel a bit bored. Well, I know, I remember many years ago when I was young that it's very easy to feel bored. Particularly when there are old people around. Well, we try not to bore you. But what we do ask for is your full participation. We're trying to take forward this Dhamma Kranti of Baba Sahib. And we need the energies of everybody to change India. So yes, we ask that please do come to the events, please do put yourself into them, and I'm sure that you'll find slowly you get less bored.
So, I would like to say that you always come to the events.
So I hope you all don't start yawning during my talk. I'll try and keep you interested and amused. But I ask your forgiveness if I don't succeed. I'm sure Salil will make you lively. So, what is this? What is it that Baba Sahib wanted for India? We looked at that yesterday. He wants casteless India. A democratic India, genuinely democratic India. An India of liberty, equality and fraternity. So all his life he struggled for this. He was born at a time when casteism was very strong indeed. Not just casteism, but untouchability was strong even here in Maharashtra. And he had some very, very painful experiences himself. So Baba Saheb, very early on, developed the aspiration to change the system. And he fought in so many ways throughout his life to get rid of casteism, to get rid of untouchability, to get rid of division. You know that he engaged in labor organization. He carried out the big strike in Bombay for the mill workers. Just getting basic rights for people. He fought on the social front as well. Taking water from the Chowda tank in Mahad. There's a public water tank. And it was supposed to be for everybody. But the so-called untouchables were not allowed to take the water. So Baba Sahib led a big satyagraha to take water from the tank. And afterwards, the other people, well, they had to purify the tank. So I thought, being a European, I thought, well, purifying the tank meant that they did some chemical process. They put it through, what do you call it, Aquagard, is it? You know, Bisleri water or whatever. But no, that's not how they purified it. I don't know whether you know this. How do you purify water? You put cow dung in it. So the touch of a human being makes it impure, but cow dung makes it pure. Madness. So Baba Sahib tried to break down these barriers in that sort of way. But it took almost 12 years to get the right to take water from that well. He got into Parliament. And eventually he became a member of the British Viceroy's Council. He became the Labour member of that council. And I've heard it said that he laid the foundations for labour law in India today. And he fought in so many other ways to get the British to listen to the position of Dalit people. It's very interesting that many of the British politicians and administrators were deeply impressed by Baba Saheb. My father was a naval officer in the British Navy. And he worked closely with Lord Mountbatten, who was the last British Viceroy of India. And it seems that Lord Mountbatten had a very deep appreciation of Baba Saheb. And yes, he worked in so many ways, like this. When India became independent, he was the first law minister of the independent India. And he again spent a lot of energy reforming the Indian legal system. And of course his greatest achievement was that he was the main person to draft the Indian constitution. So he replaced Manu Smriti with Bhim Smriti. Well, that constitution for India is a very, very effective one, which keeps India a living democracy today. So Baba Saheb did everything he could in the political sphere, in the social sphere, to change the system. And he gave India the basis for freedom, for justice. But he knew that was not enough. It wasn't enough because the caste system remained even with that democratic constitution. Even today, the Indian political system is dominated by caste. Even though there's a democratic constitution, caste interests dominate that constitution. So Baba Saheb saw that just changing the constitution, changing the laws, doesn't get rid of caste. It doesn't get rid of caste, yeah. It's like a disease which gives certain symptoms. You know, you get a disease and it creates spots on your face, for instance. Well, you can put powder on your face to hide the spots. Or spots on your arm or whatever. But it doesn't get rid of the disease underneath. It doesn't get rid of the disease underneath. You can treat the outside symptoms, but you don't treat what's going on deeper down. So Baba Saheb was a very, very skillful doctor. He asked, what is the nature of the disease. And where is that disease seated? Where is it based? Well, the disease is cast. So where is cast? What is cast? Well, this is the first question he asked. What is cast? What is cast? Nothing. Well, many of you have been to my talks before. But that's basically the answer that Baba Sahib gave. Caste is nothing. It doesn't exist. It's not like this stick. You can say, how long is this stick? How much does it weigh? You can touch it. You can hit somebody on the head with it. But caste isn't a fact like that. You can take a Kamble, you can take a Joshi. If the Joshi needs some blood, he can take it from the Kamble. He can have a blood transfusion. It won't make any difference. I could do surgery on Kumaraji. Realization. It's a notion, a state of mind. It has no reality. And that's in a way proved by the fact that those of us who come from outside India, we may have our own prejudices, but we don't see caste. If you spend a long time in India like me, you begin to get something of the virus inside you. So we need to inoculate Jain and Kanya quickly. So they don't pick it up. I think Salim is safe too still. Yes, if you spend a long time here, it's very difficult not to pick it up. But in England, we don't have caste. Well, correction. We do have caste, because India's greatest export to the world is caste. There's 8 lakhs Indians in England. And they've brought caste with them. Some people told me, some Indian friends of mine told me that in the schools, gangs are based on caste. And you can read in the papers, you know, Gujarati Marwari Sikhs, etc. So just like here, we have those papers. So it's something that Indians carry with them all over the world. I don't know whether this is your experience, Salim, but yes. There's been a lot of debate in England about casteism in England. And you don't need it in England. You don't need it in England. Well, you do need the discussion. You don't need caste in England. Yeah. We've got our own prejudices. We don't need yours. We've got racial prejudice. We don't need caste prejudice. But yes, caste is nothing. It's only in India that you find this. So what Baba Saheb said is, it's just an idea. So where do ideas come from? Where are they? Mind. Yes, mind. We say there, but it's really in here, isn't it? The whole body, as it were. Yeah. Caste is in the mind. This is what Baba Saheb said. It's something that the mind has created. It's not a fact, it's not an objective thing. It's something that just has been created over thousands of years and that everybody participates in. And yes, it's there, it sits in the mind. And it's subtly there whenever two Indians meet. It's even here. I've become aware of that since I've been here. And most people here are from one Maharashtrian community. But there's perhaps 10% of people from different communities. And, well, there's some unease, some tension in the air around that. The question comes in your mind, will they accept me? Do they want me? Do they see me as one of them? This is inevitably there in the mind. I don't know whether I can say every one of you will have it, but to some extent, probably most of you will have that. You become aware that somebody's from a different community. And a small question comes in your mind. Am I accepted? Do they want me? That'll be particularly the case for those who are not part of the largest group. Some people who've come from different communities have told me they felt a bit uncomfortable. And that's bound to be the case. It's been put into the mind for 4,000 years, 5,000 years, we don't know how long. You drink it in with your mother's milk. All your life, the issue is reinforced. So it's in the mind of everyone to some extent. This is an uncomfortable subject, I can feel. But the best way to deal with it is to be open about it. Because I'm innocent of this particular prejudice, I have my own prejudices, I can approach the subject. But it's something that's bound to be in the air where people from different communities are together. And I think it's particularly something that those from the so-called Buddhist community in Maharashtra need to be aware of. Because we are the largest number. And, well, you'll maybe unthinkingly say, apne log. Well, what are other people going to think when you say that? You may not mean anything by it. But other people are going to say, am I aple log or aple log nahi? So it is bound to be there. Because it's universal in the mind of India. And it's a very, very strong mental conditioning. You can change the economic circumstances, you can change the technical environment, but caste adapts. I say it's like a chameleon.
Girgit.
You know, you put the girgit on something red, and it goes red. You put it on something blue and it goes blue. So caste is like a chameleon. It changes its color, but basically it remains the same. So Baba Sahib knew that the issue was very, very deep in the mind of India. And he realized that to get it out of the mind of India needs very, very deep work. If you want to read his best thinking about this, it's in Annihilation of Caste. I strongly recommend that to our friends from outside India. It's a very interesting and powerful work. Baba Sahib has a wonderful English style. It's a sort of high Victorian, powerful style. Ekdom Hindi Shabda. So yes, he said, if you want to get rid of caste, it's the mind that needs to change. He said, what mind has created, mind can undo. That's what we're here to do. We're here to undo that caste conditioning in us. Even those who become Buddhists, they've got rid of caste to some extent. But still there's a sense of aple log, aple log nahi. So there's still more work to do to get it out of the mind. Yes, I'm sorry, if I could just ask you not to take photographs, because when the photographer comes up, everybody starts looking at the photographer. And it's much more important than you look at Kumaraji. That's why I've worn a special shirt, so that it's more easier to look at me. Yes, so we need to try to get caste out of the mind much more deeply. Just for the last month, I've had a cough. I caught it in Buddha Gaya. So it's a Bihari cough. And every now and again, it goes away. And I think, oh, good, I'm free. And then, back it comes. It changes into a UP cough. Then it changes into a Punjabi cough. Then a Haryani cough. Rajasthani cough. And now a Maharashtrian cough. So in other words, something underneath has not gone away. I've tried Ayurvedic medicine. It's very tasty. Wasa, very, very tasty. Somebody gave me some very nice cough syrup yesterday. But the cough remains there. Goes away, comes back again. Caste is like that. Goes away, comes back again. We need to get right down to whatever it is that's causing the cough. That's our work. So Baba Sahib asked, well, how do you get rid of caste from the mind? And he said, well, you have to get rid of it by retraining the mind. That the mind has been trained to think caste. From right early age, you're learning to think caste. That's the Indian condition. From the Himalayas to Kanyakumari, the same. Each state is very proud of its own difference. And each state thinks, well, yes, we've got our own culture. But there's one element that every state has. Caste. It's deep in the mind of India. It's conditioned into the mind. Even if we don't like it, we're still aware of it, we're still responding to it. You may not have caste sort of prejudices yourself. But you think, well, what will my friends say? What will my parents say if I'm associating with these people? If you're a girl or a boy and you're getting to know boys or girls from another caste, you're worried about what people will think. And your parents and your relations, out of love for you, will try to keep you within that caste system. So there needs to be a retraining of the mind. This was Baba Sahib's great insight. You can't just get rid of it by changing the constitution. So he asked the question, how to retrain the mind? He said, for instance, there's no freedom unless the mind is trained for freedom. You can make somebody free, you can give them freedom, but if they don't know how to take that freedom, well, they won't be free. You can give somebody freedom, you can give them the opportunity for freedom, but if they don't know how to take advantage of it, they can't be free. In this jungle here, there's a the ranger's station. And I went to visit him once, and he had a big tiger there. I'm very fond of tigers. I'd like to be a tiger. He had this tiger which had been found near Chandrapur, just deserted. So they brought it here to Bodaran and put it in a big compound. And the idea was they were caring for it until it could go wild. When I went to visit it, it was in this compound, and there were lots of deer there. The tiger and the deer were friends. But it was actually, it's lunch, but it wasn't eating it. It just thought there were other tigers, I think. So it was just playing with the chitral and the sambal. And when they let the tiger loose, it didn't know how to hunt. And it just used to come back to the compound and ask for food. So that they were saying, go on, you're free, out in the jungle. And you say, no, where's my lunch? So they had to train the tiger to be free. So, well, you could say in a way that India became free in 1947. You kicked out the British. India, Will and my, where our ancestors left. So India was free. But Obama said, yes, you're free in constitution, but you're not really free in mind. It's a bit as if the door of India was open, the cage was open, and India came to the door, looked around, then went back inside the cage of caste. So Baba Sahib said, something deeper is needed. Some big change in the mind is needed. And he thought deeply about what the training needed to be that would change the mind of India. And after much thought, much investigation, he came to the conclusion that the best way to train the mind of India for freedom was through the Buddha Dhamma. Not that everybody would become a Buddhist, but he thought that many people would become Buddhist because they wanted to get away from the old system. And if enough people really become Buddhists, really train their mind through Buddhism, that would change the mind of India. So he saw in the Buddha Dhamma the training of the mind for freedom. If you practice the Buddha Dhamma, your mind becomes more and more free. You develop more and more the casteless mind. Well, for instance, yesterday many of you will have done the Maitri Bhavana. Maitri Bhavana is casteless mind. You just send your Maitri to other beings. You don't think they're from this caste, they're from that caste. You just wish them well as a fellow human being. So you've been doing already this training in the casteless mind. So Baba Sahib saw the Buddha Dhamma as the way to train the mind to be casteless. We're going to explore this much more over the next days. We'll be looking at how the Buddha Dhamma trains the mind for freedom. We've already had some experience of it. But essentially, it trains the mind for freedom in three ways. It trains the mind for freedom through sila, through morality. It trains the mind for freedom through meditation. And it trains the mind for freedom through prajna, through wisdom. So through undertaking these three trainings, your mind gradually becomes free of caste and other prejudices. And we become more effective human beings, more satisfied human beings, more loving human beings towards others. And we're therefore able to be the ideal citizens of a democratic state. It's not enough just to say, I am a Buddhist. That's a good first step. Because under the old system, well, you're not a human being, you're a caste member. You identify yourself with a particular caste. You know, when you meet another person, your first experience is, I'm this caste, what caste are they? So the first thing that happens is you let go of that caste identification. You try to let go of that caste identification. And you say, I'm just a human being. That's what it is to be a Buddhist. You just become a human being. But the problem is that Buddhist becomes another caste label. And we start to think of ourselves as Buddhist, which is just another word for caste. So we need to go much further with the training. It's not enough just to call yourself Buddhist. When you become a Buddhist, you also say, I am responsible for my life. Under the old system, well, you're not responsible. You just have to do your caste dhamma. You just have to live out that life that's been given to you. It's all beyond your control. Somebody will help you if you give enough coconuts. And you have a sort of, that you try to bribe the higher forces. You give chai pani to the gods. And you hope that they'll rearrange your life for you. Well, I went to Chhattisgarh last year. And I was shown a very, very big temple there. And I was told that that temple was a place where ladies went to if they wanted a son.
So
If you go there, you'll get a son. Well, I don't think that's the way you get sons. Or daughters, come to that. And why want sons rather than daughters? But yes, you think it's not up to you. But when you become a Buddhist, you say, no, my future is in my hands. If I live a good life, that's up to me. So you take that sort of responsibility. So yes, you leave behind the old identity. You take on responsibility for yourself. But it's not enough. You need to train the mind much, much more deeply, much more fully. Otherwise, we've just stopped the cough, but the disease is still in the chest. And it comes out in some situations, in some circumstances. And gradually, Buddhism, Buddhist, just means new caste. Better one, yes. But still just a caste. So we need to take the training much deeper. We need to get right down to the roots of the problem. We need to work deeply with the mind. So that's probably enough for today. It's the mind we need to be dealing with. It's in the mind that caste has its roots. If we want Jai Bhim, we need to do this work. If you just say Jai Bhim, there won't be Jai Bhim. To bring the victory of Bhim, you need to work deeply on your mind. We want to change India. So you have to start changing Indians. Well, which Indian can you change? Well, husbands always think they can change their wives. Wives always think they can change their husbands. Parents think they can change their children. Children try to change their parents. Does it work? Have you managed to change your parents? Not much, anyway. So who can you change? Huh? Swaya? Self? Self, yes. That's the Indian you can change. So the change of India begins with one Indian. The change of the world begins with one human being. And the change is in the mind of one human being. It's your mind that you need to change. It's my mind that I need to change. And we need to change our minds so that they're casteless. And for Baba Sahib, the best way to do that was through the practice of the Buddha Dhamma. Because the Buddha Dhamma gives us tools to change our minds. It gives us Shila Shiksha. It gives us Samadhi Shiksha. It gives us Prajna Shiksha. The training of morality, meditation and wisdom. So if you really want to carry through this revolution of Baba Sahib's, you need to work on yourself. Baba Sahib said that many people try to change things. But they don't change themselves. You know, you see many politicians talking about getting rid of caste. And then they go home and they beat their wives. This is true, this is what happens. So there's no equality at home. It's all equality, equality, equality on the platform. But in the home it's violence, it's oppression. We need to change ourselves. If we change ourselves, we can help others to change themselves. And Baba Sahib says that in the Buddha Dhamma we've got the tools for that change. He thought the Buddha Dhamma was the best means to do it, partly because it's an Indian religion. He wasn't a subscriber to Hindutva. He didn't believe in that approach at all. But he thought, well, the greatest period of Indian history, of Indian culture, was when Buddhism was alive. And Buddhism is under the surface of India. Literally, if you dig down almost anywhere, you'll find Buddhist remains. But it's also under the surface of the culture. The Buddha Dhamma has influenced modern Hinduism. And it's there in the background of Indian culture. So he thought that that was the best way forward. He also thought that the Buddha Dhamma is in conformity, or not in contradiction, with modern science. Well, I'll take a contentious issue. There's a lot of arguing about the Ram Sethi. And, you know, some people saying there's no evidence for it. Some people saying, well, yes, it's in the Puranas or whatever, yeah. But scientists, they look and they say, no, it's not there. But Buddhism has no problems of that kind. It doesn't have any conflict with modern scientific outlook. It doesn't ask you to believe anything that can't be proved. So he thought this was the appropriate religion for a modern people. Finally, the Buddha Dhamma, like many other religions, has a very strong idea of equality. But it comes in a very clear form. So for these reasons, he felt that the Buddha Dhamma gave the trainings that will help to bring the casteless mind. So that's what we're going to be pursuing over the next days. How does the Buddha Dhamma train the mind to be casteless? We'll not only be learning how it does it, we'll be trying to practice it. But I'd ask you all to just spend the next period, the next day or so, just watching your own mind. Just watch for those signs of caste. Don't feel bad about it. This is a conditioning that most people have got. Is there any hesitation when you meet people from different communities? What thoughts come into your mind? Just watch. Don't judge. But just be aware that that conditioning is there. On the surface you may be against caste. But underneath, caste attitudes continue. This is what we need to get rid of. So if you can become a little bit aware of this, that will make our task easier. So, that'll do for today. And we'll finish by hoping for the victory of Bhim. We've seen a little bit how we can make that victory come about. So remember that.
Jai Bhim!
Jai Bhim!